All the second stage tanks now pressurized. 35 seconds and counting. We are still going.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending.
Are we beginning to see the formation of a fundamental shift in the American dream of home ownership?
A weekly mortgage market update.
20 seconds and counting.
Fighting up-to-the-minute information.
Of Chinese investors in the real estate market, and they're really starting to have an impact, but it's only
on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
If you look at it on a dollar value, it's significant. If you look at it on a unit basis, it's inconsequential to the overall big market.
To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972.
Here's the deal. How much of the market, real estate market, is comprised of this type of property?
12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start.
And now, here's your host of Lickin' on Lending,
3, 2,
David Lickin.
So good to have you with us, everybody. I'm getting used to that new opening. I like it. Andy Alvey did a great job on that. It's Monday, October 30th, 2017. We're back from Denver, Colorado, from the Mortgage Banking Conference there. It was well attended, as you're going to hear a number of reports. Alan and Alice are going to give us reports from there. Specifically, I was there. We're just really excited about a lot of things going on in the industry. A lot of positive energy, a lot of young new faces in the industry, and that is encouraging. So we'll see if they're going to repeat some of the lessons we learned early on. So we're going to talk a bit about that. A lot of comments about the new group that's coming in. It's encouraging. Alan's got some comments and feedbacks on some of that. But again, I guess this Monday, it is October 30th podcast for those of you that are listening on a downloaded basis. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we now have an increasing number of real estate professionals listening in. We're grateful to have all of you, as we say here in Texas, all y'all joining in and listening. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere and stay on top of all that is going on in our industry. So we appreciate you sharing this with your associates and others that you know in the industry. We have a number of people that their spouses aren't even in the industry, and they have their spouses listening to what's going on in the podcast just so they can stay up and talk about what's going on in the industry. So I thought that was good. So one person said, this has helped our marriage. My husband's able to stay up on what's going on in the industry by listening to your podcast. So whoever you want to share this with, please do so. Thrilled and honored to be a part of your lives in whatever way you can do that. We have a hot topic segment today, Lynn Fisher. She'll be joining us. She is Vice President, Dr. Lynn Fisher, I should say. She is in the Research and Economics Department, works closely with Mike Frattantoni. Just going to be joining us and giving us an economic update from the latest economic information report that the MBA released last week. We had Mike Frattantoni step into the booth at Finastra, where we did the podcast. Again, had some more audio issues. Some of you told us about it. Always a challenge when you're doing it from live. But it was really good to have Mike step into the booth to give us an update. So we're going to get a much more detailed look at it, more of analysis, where the numbers come from, what are the consequences of this latest economic forecast as we look into the future. So there's some good information here. You'll want to stay tuned in all the way to that part of the program we call the Hot Topic segment. I want to say a special thank you to ArchMI, the creator of the new RateStar program, which is one of our sponsors, as well as Motivity Solutions, providing real-time and reporting, dashboard and scorecard. And soon to be on here, as of next week, we will have Black Knight as a new sponsor. Thrilled to have Black Knight joining us. They acquired Motivity Solutions. We're going to have both Motivity and Black Knight as sponsors. Also, Belma, an efficient mortgage marketing and email platform you've got to check out, and a way to communicate with people. A lot of buzz at the conference about how we're connecting, communicating. E-platforms, everything E is happening. It's real. It's really beginning to dominate. Company that is doing a great job with electronic communications is Simplifile. Nancy, Alley, and the team there do a great job in real-time electronic communications with closing agents. They provide a host of services. We'll get into that a bit later. Also, the Mortgage Collaborative, the power of the network. David Kittle and team are going to be, we're hoping to get more from the Mortgage Collaborative on the program. David and I are working on a whole series of things and hope to have that be a more integral part of what is going on. So we're grateful for the relationship with the Mortgage Collaborative and the power of the network. Finally, Finastra, the third largest fintech company in the world, is a major sponsor of us. They have over 10,000 employees in 42 countries. 9,000 companies worldwide are using their services. So we're grateful to have all these sponsors here. A special thank you goes out to Alice and Andy and Joe and Sam and all our normal contributors that are here. We don't see Sam dialed into the podcast today, so we're going to probably be missing him. But it's good to have all the rest of you together. It's so important that we talk about what's going on. These conferences that we just had happen this last week in Denver are so important. They're so important for so many reasons. Yes, it's, you know, there's a lot of meetings and collaboration that goes on. You get to, you know, meet and connect with people that you work with that only remotely on the phone. But it is really important that we connect and find out what's going on in the industry. We also have another conference that's coming up. I'll be speaking at it this week, November 1st through the 3rd. It is Compliance Eases Risk and Compliance Summit in San Francisco. My session is talking about developing a compliant social media strategy, and I'll be speaking with Don Lamp at Compliance Ease Risk and Compliance Summit. So really looking forward for those of you that will be attending that. Come up. I look forward to getting your thoughts on that. Also, I'll be the keynote speaker at MGIC's Focus 2017 in Nashville, the 15th and 16th. A number of our listeners will be attending that. Go over to our website or go over to Sam Garcia's Mortgage Daily website, or the MBA website. You'll see all the conferences that are out there. And Andy's going to be talking about one that's coming up here shortly. In fact, this may be a good time, Mr. Shell, for you to jump in and talk about one that's coming up in San Antonio. And you're going to be speaking at this. I'm very excited. In fact,
I am. It's the Total Geek Out Conference. It's the Accounting and Financial Management Conference. It's happening on November the 12th. It actually starts that weekend and goes through Wednesday. Lots of really interesting topics, which I think are interesting. I'm going to be speaking about interest rate lock commitment, unrealized gain, overstatement of capital, which ends in a material misstatement. So blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
So basically, it's really, really important stuff. Business owners, you got to know this stuff. Otherwise, you're just going to always have to just trust me. You need to know more about finance, know about accounting. We're going to be covering it at this conference. It'll be great. Look me up. I'll be there.
Yeah, in fact, Marina Walsh, who she's a fan of you. She loves what your analysis and a lot of your feedback. And she would caught me after Lynn and I and were together when Mike Frantoni and Lynn were giving the forecast. And, of course, Marina was there. And she says, we're excited to be having Andy speak. Come on down, Dave. So we're looking at it as a possible. Oh, I know. I'm speaking. That's right during what I'm doing the MGIC conference, so I can't attend it. That's what it was. There was a conflict. But she's excited to have you speaking, Andy. And I'm sure anyone who listens to you, you have that gift at making complex things like accounting seem to be able to be understandable. Yes, that's a gift. It's like a good interpreter.
Thank you, Dave. You're too kind. And it's actually going to be really fun. I'm speaking on a panel with Andy Greer, who runs, who's in the Warehouse Lending Group at First Tennessee. He's going to be talking about the warehouse line lender's view of financial statements, and Santo Chiarelli from an accounting firm.
Oh, Santo.
Yes, up in New Jersey.
Yeah.
He's going to be talking about tax and audit issues. It's going to be really interesting. I mean, I make it sound really bad, like going to the dentist, but it's really essential information because you know what it does, Dave? It affects your ability to have your warehouse line borrowing base go up or down, and it potentially affects your agency capital qualification requirements, in addition to your HUD calculation for capital availability. So it's important stuff. It's important to know. Even if the presidents don't go, your finance people got to go. You got to know this stuff.
Gotta be there.
And too many people sit on the sidelines.
It is so true. Great conference, and it's down in San Antonio, and it is what week again, Andy, for those that can still register?
Next week. Well, no, 2 weeks.
Week after next? Yeah, week after 12th.
Starts on the 12th and goes through that 5th to 15th Wednesday.
Yeah, that'll be a great conference. Good job on that. Appreciate you being a part of the podcast. And because I know we're going to skip the normal Profit Doctor segment because we want to allow extra time with Lynn, Dr. Lynn Fisher, on going over the economic forecast. Really want your feedback in on that. Normally, we'd be running over to Rob to give an MBA report. He was at the conference. I just got an email. He just did not get a chance to put together a report. But we've got Lynn here, and we've got a number of us going to be giving a report from the conference and what's going on. So we're going to skip that, but we're going to go over and get the macroeconomic view of what's going on from our good friend Les Parker at Loan Logic. So with that, Les Parker, what you got for us, friend?
Dave, you were everywhere during the NBA convention. I found out that my central banker costume is banned. Like clowns this year, it's too scary to be funny. Loan Logics appreciates the opportunity to share Market Logics Live.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. My monster from its slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
I was looking at my pad late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. Forfed bankers from their lab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise, they did the mash. They did the monster mash. Fed forecasting has been off for about 30 years. Paul Volcker, when asked about the Phillips curve used by the Fed to forecast and drive policy, said, "I thought we buried that 30 years ago." Now that is scary. The Fed needs to support the dollar by constraining money growth rather than dancing with monsters. Otherwise, global financial markets will see another nightmare. These views are my own. Go to loanlogics.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Well, only Les Parker could turn out something like that, he and the team. So mixing in the monster mash with global economics and Fed policy. Well, there you go. It's pretty good. That's actually pretty decent. Joe Farr, good to have you dialed in with us, my friend. Can you get up and hum a few bars of the monster mash when you do your economic update? No, and probably not good, and not a good idea. Anyway.
I can talk about the Fed.
That's talk about the Fed.
We'll talk about that in the week ahead because it's all about the Fed this week. Right now, it's about tax policy. MBS prices jumped about 10 o'clock Central Time when it was reported that House Ways and Means Committee's tax proposal might phase in the corporate tax rate, the reduction of the corporate tax rate. When that happened, the stocks they didn't plummet because they're only down 80, but they fell and MBS prices improved. So we're sitting at up 6/32 on the day and not enough above morning levels to expect a lot of repricing, but certainly good to be up. And that was the reason core PCE came in pretty much as expected. And even though it's a very important measure of inflation, it did not move the market because it matched expectations. So last week was a fairly volatile week, and it ended with essentially no change in MBS prices, so no change in what your customer would have to pay to get a particular rate. Early in the week, the market reacted negatively to the report that John Taylor was considered one of the two top front runners for president's selection to replace Janet Yellen. He's considered a good bit more hawkish, if you will, in that he would be expected to raise Fed funds rates quicker than many of the other candidates would. So as was reported early last week, it was between Taylor and Powell. Since then, the consensus has fallen toward Powell, and he's considered sort of a continuing current policy, much less of a disruption to the market, if you will. If the president does pick, which he's now said he'll do on Thursday, Powell, then we should not see a lot of reaction in the market if he were to go with, same would be true for Yellen. And if he were to go with Taylor, I would expect to see some negative reaction in the mortgage markets if that were his pick. So that was just part of what went on during the week, last week. In addition, we had an ECB meeting. They did pretty much as expected in announcing what they were going to do with their bond buying program. They're extending it 9 months, and they're going to purchase at 30 billion euro a month as opposed to current run rates of 60. But that was as expected, and even though there's a drop in the demand for bonds in the months ahead, since it was expected, it wasn't market moving. Last week, we also saw the first look at the third quarter GDP, and it came in. The headline number was hotter than expected, 2.5. There were a lot of different consensus last week, anywhere from 2.5 to 2.7. The third quarter came in at 3%. Much of that was due to build up in inventories, and that's sort of considered a one-time event and not sustainable economic growth. So the market discounted that some, and when you back that build up in inventories out, the economic activity was even a little short of those expectations, and we saw a small improvement in MBS prices when that data came out. Also, last week, durable orders exceeded expectations. Housing data was mixed. New home sales rose to the best levels in a decade, whereas pending home sales, which is 90% of the market, fell short of expectations. So the data last week didn't have a lot to do with it. And like I said, at the end of the day on Friday, prices were about exactly where they started to begin the day on Monday. This week is huge, okay, for significant events. The thing that came out this morning, but we do expect Trump's decision on Thursday of his nomination for the next Fed chair. So again, pay attention. If it is Powell, like I said, that would kind of be the smoothest event. If it's John Taylor, it could be a pretty volatile event. The Fed meets on Wednesday, and even though no expectations are for rate change, there is always a chance for a change in guidance in one way or another and could cause the market to move. It's on Wednesday that the House Ways and Means Committee has said they expect to reveal their tax bill. Since the tax bill's been, you know, framework of the tax bill's been proposed, and as they work through the various aspects of the tax bill, they're getting some feedback, some pushback that would say, especially recently from the home builders and the realtors, as the tax bill may not have the benefits of home ownership advantage in there. And I'll be interested to hear a person today talk about that. But as is going to happen, anytime you take something away, you're going to get people to complain about that. We'll just see how strong the politicians are at sticking to the expectation to make it a simpler overall policy. Non-farm payrolls comes out on Friday, and the consensus calls for over 300,000 in new jobs. Now, that's following a negative 33,000 last month, and clearly it's a makeup of the hurricane-related effect on August, and so or on September, and so the sum of the 2 months will average about 150,000 net new jobs, which is pretty much in line with what's been happening. Unemployment rate's expected to rise from 4.2 to 4.3, and the average hourly earnings is expected to drop back a little bit. It was extremely hot in September. We also have ISM manufacturing on Wednesday and services on Friday. So it's a big, big week this week with a lot of potential market moving events.
Lots of potential activity. And how can people manage this risk? By signing
they
up for MBS Pro.
They could have our service.
They could have your service. This kind of volatility, it can just turn old man's hair gray in a minute. And I think we've got a lot more. Whether it be a tweet or whether it be who the next Fed chairperson is or global economics, it's just like there's so much going on in the market right now. You just can't operate a business without having a tool where you measure this. So kudos to you for doing a great job. I love how your time is real-time data. And it's concise and to the point. It's a quick website, and you got a great tool on a mobile basis. I'm encouraging people to sign up, and they can do so at your website. For those that have not
Correct.
Already taken advantage of the free offer, they can do that.
Yep. That's right.
Good deal. Excellent. I look forward to chatting with you some more, my friend. Thank you so much. We're going to be right back after this brief break. I look forward to getting an update from Alice Alvey. Hold on. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Are you using one of those expensive CRMs that your loan officers won't use? If so, then give my friends at Velma a call and let them help you create a customer journey that relies on the data and not on loan officer interaction. I encourage you to consider working with Velma to create a truly automated marketing experience for your organization. Velma makes marketing automation easy. Schedule a demo today at Velma.com, VELMA.com.
The Mortgage Collaborative is the nation's only independent cooperative. The Collaborative provides its members the opportunity to meet and form meaningful relationships with top mortgage professionals and leaders in our industry. In a relationship-driven business such as ours, often who you know is as important as what you know. To learn more, go to mortgagecollaborative.com or call Rich Swarbinski at 440-552-0691. The power of the network.
So good to have you with us, everybody. And we've got Alice Alvey dialed in. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to come in and be with us. Give us an update. Alice, now you were at the Empower event. Is that correct?
Yes, I was. And so was we had a team of women from Union Home Mortgage. So Bill Cosgrove graciously had 10 of the women and from all levels of the company, you know, including we had HR, the recruiting and marketing, and it was just wonderful. So we had a great mix of a couple of us seasoned girls and some of the newer folks into the mortgage industry space. So it was loads of fun.
Well, it was. I heard so many people talk about that as the highlight of the conference. I'm really sorry that I didn't get to sit in and listen to that. So it's a great conference, and that was for many the highlight. Some of the information that you shared with us last week, unfortunately, because of the audio issues, did not come through. So I'd like to have you give your report that you gave us last week, Alice, and what we can learn from that. There's a lot of information that came out. And did you sit in on Ben Carson? And also, I thought you were there. I know I was there. The Ben Carson, Mel Waugh panel discussion. Now, that was really interesting.
Yes, they were very interesting and definitely helped us, you know, feel, especially Dr. Ben Carson, feeling positive about, you know, some of the things that they want to make sure they're working on, you know, for HUD. Obviously, it takes a lot of support from the industry, and I think we all need to get on the bandwagon to get them some technology, right? We've been saying that for years, and FHA is in desperate need of some of that. So, yeah, so all good things. Interestingly enough, one of the things that was mentioned that he mentioned was, you know, the taxonomy has been released. That's working well, at least from a lot of lenders' perspective. But he mentioned if you are having, send them some bulk data. We also heard this when we sat in on the FHA subcommittee meeting that the MBA had. So, you know, they are interested in hearing, is it working? Is it right on? And what are your experiences with it? For those of you who aren't familiar with this, it is the way that FHA has organized its risk classifications for when there are findings in the audit files. And so that's important to know, you know, am I at a low risk, a higher risk? Is this one I have to self-report? So so far that seems to be working smoothly. But that was one of the things I picked up on, as well as just, you know, his vision for HUD. A few other things that came up, especially the committee meeting. So for those of you who aren't involved in any of the MBA committees, for me, that is where I really find so much detail. The general meetings are great. Our folks got a lot of information out of that. And of course, you all have your individual meetings, but there's a ton to learn when you're actually in those committee meetings. And you know, when we did have CFPB in the Legislative and Regulatory Committee, and it was interesting, you know, certain things are proprietary in those meetings, so I have to be careful what I talk about here. You know, it's a safe environment, but ultimately what was excellent was just trying to really wrap your heads around this definition of a utility for GSE reform. And when I hear that term, it was helpful for me for folks to explain what that really meant, right? So it means that essentially I've got a private company, but they accept that they will have heavy regulatory oversight, and they agree to fair pricing and pricing oversight by a regulatory entity. So when you think of a utility and you think of that blend between private and government oversight, that's ultimately where the trick, you know, how that might work. And so they had there was definitely some good insight in there, but how do you get a third party other than Fannie and Freddie? You know, if you say we're going to have multiple guarantors in the future, how do you get somebody to agree to that structure? So there was definitely some skepticism, you know, across different lines on whether or not any of these plans can work, but at least there's something on the table that's beginning to get discussed. So my surprising fact of the conference.
Yes.
Know, what surprised you the most?
What? That's what I was going to, you anticipated. Yes. What?
What statement surprised me the most? Sitting in the FHA subcommittee, one of the folks from HUD, you know, we brought up mobile, right, and mobile apps. And HUD said that their study found that, and we have to get more details on it, was that lower income borrowers are more likely to use mobile applications than, and higher income borrowers are less likely to use mobile.
Interesting.
Yes, and I wonder if that has to do with age, indirectly, right? That young, if you're a younger person, odds are you may be in a lower income part of your life, right, and you're still working there, and maybe more senior folks have some higher income. But I'm not sure that's really a demographic inside the stat. We'll have to find out more. But it was an extremely interesting note that came out of that. And it wasn't just a side comment, right? It came from somebody from HUD. So that's my 2 cents. I've got some more we can say for next week, because I know we have a special guest on today. But lots of great information from the MBA conference. And I have to say the MPower event, the panel discussions in the beginning from the women leadership at various banks and lenders across the country, that part was fabulous to get their insight into what's going on in their business. For those of you guys who are out there going, I wish I had been a fly on the wall, it was not a guy bashing thing at all.
Yes, I heard that. Yeah, that's exactly right.
That is not the focus, yes. So that's my two cents for today, Dave, and I'll turn it back to you.
It's good. Yeah, well, it's good to hear because a lot of – when you hear that it's a female event, is this, you know, something where it's like woman power? It wasn't. It was, you know, we need to bring diversity, and a lot of that has some political – can sound PC-ish. I got to tell you, everything I've heard about that event from you, who I respect so much, and so many others, said none of that was even present. So anyone who's hearing this is, finally, we got to give the girls their time and space. That was just – that's just wrong characterization. Marcia did an outstanding job of bringing together a great program and a very good speaker, I heard. And so it's good to hear that positive feedback. We're going to get behind it in a big way and support it every way we can. I appreciate you giving this update. So want to hear more? Look forward to next week. Hey, we could just go on and on about all this. We're going to take a quick break. We got Alan Pollock dialed in. We're going to look forward to hearing an update about the mortgage conference from a tech perspective. So folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break. We've got David Bolin with Finastra with an update. David?
Hey, thanks a lot, David. Finastra is extremely proud to be a key sponsor of the Lickin' On Lending Program. Known formerly as D&H, Finastra's global lending division provides end-to-end solutions and innovation to the full spectrum of lenders, including independent mortgage bankers, community banks and credit unions, and even the largest banks globally. Learn more about how you provide an innovative digital experience for your borrowers by leveraging our multi-channel point-of-sale solution, which includes the new MortgageBot Mobile, by visiting our website at finastra.com.
Simplifile has technology that gives you the ability to collaborate with settlement agents via real-time chat and messaging, allowing you to track changes, send, receive, and validate documents, as well as obtain status updates and deal with issues as they arise. All of this in a real-time electronic communication exchange. And best of all, you have a complete audit trail of all communications. To learn more, go to simplifile.com or call our good friend Nancy Alley at 1-800-460-5657.
Well, this conference had many aspects of it. We get to see Simplifile and Finastra. We did the podcast from the Finastra booth. Big thank you to Finastra for letting us do that. They set up their equipment. It's really a good good event, and it draws a lot of attention to their booth. So, and then we got to see Nancy Alley running through the halls and the folks at Simplifile. They do a great job. So appreciate both of our sponsors. Alan Pollock is on the line. Alan is the newest addition to our consulting firm here at TMS. He is going to be covering more of the technology components of the consulting areas of the business, and we're thrilled to have you a part of the podcast as well, Alan. Give us an update. You tried to give us an update last week. We didn't hear you all so well, so give it again in a little more
detail.
That's
all right. Well, thanks for having me back. I will say it was very cool to broadcast live from the Finastra booth. I thought that the radio setup and the big lights that you had shining down, a lot of people actually came up to me later on through the conference and said that they saw us broadcasting, so I thought that was pretty cool.
It did help add some traffic to the Finastra booth, so yes, it did.
Right.
It was good. Yeah, but talk about some of the technology. Alice talked about some of the things. There were some of the big surprises. Were there any big surprises from you from a technology standpoint there?
Yeah, it depends who you ask. A lot of folks will say it was the same old, same old. I will tell you, I felt that it was well attended. I also felt that it was productive, and most of the people that I spoke with felt the same. I didn't really ask people about the content. I myself did not go into most of the content in the events. I spent a lot of time chatting with different people, but I think the overall opinion was that it was well attended and very productive. I will say that, you know, you mentioned earlier in the broadcast that on the Crisman report, Rob Crisman had posted a note, Thursday's commentary, about someone under the age of 30 who expressed little desire, in his quotes, someone under the age of 30 who expressed little desire, reason to attend the usual breakfast sessions, lunch sessions, cocktail party, and a bunch of 35 to 65 year olds. Yeah. It struck again against many of his readers who you know felt the complete opposite, that they have a lot to learn. So if you don't read the Crisman report, you definitely want to go check it out. He's got some interesting commentary around that, and folks that feel the both. But you know, I think I spoke with you a little bit earlier today, and you said, you know, I saw a lot of t-shirts and suits, right? So, but that age is upon us. And I can tell you, there were a number of people walking around, some that I knew, but they're looking to raise capital and they're looking for good partners. So, and you know, some of our listeners may have heard that and be talking to some of those people. So keep your ears out if you're looking to become part of a company, but there definitely is some opportunity out there. Quick recap on last week. Again, you had asked me, so we were having some quick audio issues, so I figured I'd just do a super quick recap. On the direct mortgage front, I thought there were a lot of great companies there. Most of the same that we've seen all along. There were some others walking around and handing out business cards, so I did meet with one or two new companies. A lot of people are talking artificial intelligence, machine learning, user experience. I will be, along with you, especially in our new podcast, we'll be looking at how some of these companies pan out with these ideas, how they're doing. There is a lot in other industries going on with those technologies. So to see how that comes into our own industry is, of course, very, very interesting. Lots of talk about digital mortgage still. What does it mean? I think a lot of people are redefining their opinion on it, how they approach it. The consensus overall is what we've said really in the past, that it is the whole process. It's the front, it's the back, it's adding efficiencies, it's helping to automate redundant or human tasks to remove or mitigate that human error or that element of human error, reduce costs, add efficiencies, but most of all, it's going to bring us new challenges and disruptive ideas, and I think that's going to really be where everybody's focused. Also, one great idea that I heard, you had introduced me, and I'd spent a little bit of time with a company called the Knowledge Coop. Yeah, very interesting idea. You know, in the communication process within a lot of organizations is, I wouldn't say it's broken, but it's fast moving, and there's a lot of information moving around. So they basically create, it's like a knowledge base, they call it the Coop. Each individual lender or even a technology company can use this, and not only do they supply content into that Coop, but you can support and supply your own, and it allows for the distribution and the collaboration of that content. So they can feed in regulatory information, compliance information, you can subscribe to information, but then again, you also internally can have that, and you communicate and share and distribute. So I thought that was a very interesting idea. I know you spent a couple minutes with them as well.
I did. I was really impressed with them, and we're going to be working with them in our consulting firm, and we're bringing them in and making it a part of what we do. And I think a lot of this, I have such a value for Alice Alvey and the way the training has been done. It's just the whole world is going to video. And one of the things that I did, or I'm speaking on this week in preparation with me speaking at Focus or at the Compliance Summit out in San Francisco with Compliances, I'm doing a lot of research again, fresh updated research on what is really causing people to stay at a website. Video is without question one of the key components of engagement in this age, especially that younger generation. They're used to it. YouTube, you know, we talk about that all the time. And it is just real. These guys do a great job of it.
Yeah, they do. I was going to say, I think for now on, when you call me, I'd like for you to FaceTime me, and then we can start moving on to the video front.
So, I think so. I think, yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. So I will say that, you know, we did mention that we have come up with a name for our new technology podcast.
Yes.
It's
going
to be called Tech Stack Radio. We can brand that. We can say, you know, mortgage tech stack radio, real estate tech stack radio, fintech, and so forth. And we are hoping to bridge the gap between everything mortgage. So all of those folks, companies, and lending institutions that want to be part of this industry and all the intersection of that. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I would say that for anybody that is interested, you know, you can contact. We have two email addresses we mentioned last week. It is david@tms-advisors.com and alan@tms-advisors.com. We're hoping to have live listener call-ins. We're looking to do live surveys. We're looking to have opinions.
Yeah.
We've got a mobile app in the works. It's going to be a lot of fun. I will say, David, you and I have been preparing a ton of content. I've got some interviews that we're just doing some final edits on. We have Ben Maddick from Maddick Insurance talking about their disruptive technology for homeowners insurance. We've got Lionel Urban from PC Lender and Fiserv talking about their new partnership with Fiserv. And just this past week, you and I met with Jonathan Core and Joe Tyrell from Ellie Mae, and we talked about their plans to continue really their efforts going forward with AI, machine learning, content distribution, along with their acquisition of Velocify. So on our industry side, a lot of great stuff going on. But I will tell you, in addition to that, I did want to follow up. There are some pretty cool tech topics going on. So number one, the new iPhone X is on its way out very shortly. And right now, eBay is actually they have tickets for the iPhone X scalped for $1,500 a pop. So the phone has definitely stirred up some interest. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. Talking about artificial intelligence, check this out. Worky, which is the name of a company, launches Tinder for recruitment. And so it's a millennial-focused app downloaded to your phone. They say now that millennials change their jobs every 2 years, and this starts as a chatbot. It asks a number of questions, so it gathers data. It uses machine learning, very similar to how our industry is starting to try and leverage the same technology, and it lets you swipe interested or non-interested into job opportunities. And the results of that, very similar to how Tinder works, will go to that recruiter, and if there's a similar interest, they'll contact you and you can learn more. So a little bit disruptive, little, you know, sort of change of the expectation. Very cool technology. And one other thing to mention is eBay just launched their visual search. So you can take a picture of a pair of shoes and they will try through their database to match that picture using image recognition and automatically show you all of the similar or the same options. And finally, our Megabots Giant Duel that I mentioned 2 or 3 weeks back, those giant robots that have come back. The team spent, you know, at least a year building these things out. USA and Japan went head-to-head, and United States did win. Yes, it had a giant saw that came out and extended and just chopped the other one apart. So if you want to check that out, you can YouTube it. Just put in Megabots Giant Duel. Maybe we'll get a mortgage industry mega duel going one day. But that's it from my side. Again, if you're interested in hearing more, just, if you don't mind, David, just share your information one more time for our upcoming podcast.
Yep. We've got come on, get a hold of us. We look forward to hearing you about it. Email me at david@tms-advisors or alan@tms-advisors.com. Alan, thanks so much. We've got to run on. We've got Lynn on hold. We're looking forward to diving into the economic forecast for the MBA. So good to have you with us, everybody. We're going to be right back after a brief word from our good friends at John Maynell at, that's right, Motivity Solutions with the KPI of the week.
Thank you, David, very much. Great to be here, as always. And this week, we have another underwriting-focused key performance indicator, and the KPI is average resubmits per file. This single measurement can not only help lenders develop consistency in underwriting and optimize departmental processes, it can also guide business users to examine contributing tasks and processing that affect this number. KPIs in practice, and you might say by definition, are constantly on display and updated in near real time, making it much easier to pinpoint however many friction points may be combining to produce a given effect, like number of resubmissions, which can also vary by product type, another aspect that the KPI can uncover, demonstrating once again that what gets measured gets results. And with that, Dave, I will turn it back to you. Thanks very much again.
Very good. Appreciate them, as well as Jim Jump over at Arch Mortgage. I had a chance to go to the Arch Mortgage reception. What an amazing reception that was. So many people. I encourage you, to, if you're not signed up with Arch, to go ahead and get signed up with them. Get a hold of your local representative. Go to our website, Lincoln on Lending, and you will see our website has a link to theirs, and we'd love to make sure you also get signed up with Arch MI. Well, without further ado, let's get over to Lynn Fisher. It was fun to run into Lynn while we are there. Lynn has served as Vice President of Research and Economics for the MBA for a number of years, and she is responsible for managing MBA's economic and mortgage origination forecasts and developing analysis on important issues in a whole bunch of areas within the industry. We're excited to have her here. She also is the Executive Director of the MBA's Research Institute for Housing America. RIHA. So it's the association's 501c3. So, Lynn, good to have you with us. Really appreciate you joining in. And needless to say, a lot of people are dialed in. I'm looking at people from all over the country dialed in, ready to get your update. So let's get into it.
Thanks for having me today.
One of the things when you and I ran into each other at the conference, you're going, yeah, there's some numbers in this economic forecast that not everyone's going to like. But if they look at the big picture, there's actually some reason to be encouraged. So let's get into the good, the bad, and where the optimism is. Well, I always like to have some optimism here as we look forward to. So well, let's get into it. Let's talk, first of all, global economics. I mean, general economics for the country. When you look at that, if you could cover that, starting with gross domestic product, let's start there.
Well, Dave, I mean, as we've been saying for a while, GDP, real GDP growth is steady. It's going to be 2%, give or take a little bit, over the next couple of years. So it's steady growth. It's not fantastic growth, as you were just alluding to, but it's steady, and the job market's right behind it, right? Building it
right up.
Unemployment rates keep falling. We had a little bit of a macro update there a little while ago, and you know, job growth has actually been a little faster than we thought it would be this year. So that's been certainly a positive for housing demand. On top of that, you layer in what's going on with the Fed, and that's a bit of a counterpoint. Everyone's like, oh no, interest rates are going to go up. But one of the things to keep in mind is the Fed's not going to keep bringing up slowly interest rates unless the economy keeps improving, right? They're not going to try to jolt us somewhere the economy doesn't want to go. So we're looking for another rate hike here at the end of the year.
Right. And let's talk a little bit. If you touched on the Fed. You heard us talking about that earlier. Any thoughts about the – no, we don't make predictions as to who's going to become Fed chairperson. But, I mean, could you give us some – your analysis, yours and Mike's analysis, that what we could anticipate one way or another? Or have you, I'm sure you've been thinking about it.
Well, we've certainly been thinking about it, but it is certainly hard to predict exactly what is going to come out of the White House. You heard earlier that, you know, Powell being talked about a little bit more. John Taylor is certainly not out of the running. You know, Chairwoman Yellen is still presumably there, and I guess Warsh is really the other person that seems to be rounding out the top four under consideration. So your guess is really as good as mine at this point. Well, we're going to hear this week, so that's the best part of it, right?
The best part is the mystery. The waiting is over.
Mystery. That is what we hope for.
When you look at some of the numbers that are some of the drivers to the economy, do you overall, I'm getting text messages in from people. If you hear things chiming around the back, a lot of questions are coming in. One of the questions is coming, overall, do you see the economy going? Where do you see the economy? And then we're going to get into the housing numbers.
Nothing that we see, you know, that is going to push us magically to a new world, but we have a lot of policy decisions coming down the pike. We have tax reform. We still think that GSC reform is in the offing. Lots of other policies. We still haven't heard much about an infrastructure bill, right?
Yeah, but the GSE reform, that's one of the questions that just came in, is does GSE reform really have any impact economically? I mean, I guess if there's something, I can't imagine they're going to mess with the system so much that it could affect housing, because everyone respects and values and sees the value of housing in the market. Could GSE reform have a negative impact?
It's really hard to see how it would have a major impact on the economy. It could certainly cause some confusion in the markets if it's not handled well or some things aren't done. People have been a little bit worried. I know at the conference we talked about, you know, what happens when the GSEs, you know, run out of cash on hand. Most people understand how that's going to work. You know, they still have a line of credit to the Treasury. There really isn't a problem there, but on paper it might look a little funny to some folks. But in general, I think the idea that we could do something proactive to make sure that our housing market is going to be on sound footing as we go forward would be, you know, a really positive sign for this administration. And I think markets would interpret that favorably, right? If we could get something done instead of just being passive and letting conservatorship roll on.
You know, I'm looking at these numbers and I'm looking at all the comments that are coming in. One of the questions is probably best to summarize up on the overall broad economic forecast. And it's this question. In doing your analysis in your forecast, were there any surprises that you saw or some aha moments like, oh, wow, look at this. This could have a significant impact. I think there's Are you seeing anything that's out there? I'm trying to figure out exactly how they're asking this question, but I guess it's basically, is there anything out there in your research that you're saying that we really need to be focusing on more than anything else that could have a big impact?
Right. Well, I think there's really two sides right now. And I think the side that's unsurprising that we know pretty well is that housing demand is doing well, right? We have really favorable demographics. We have the millennials coming of age, right? They're going to continue to try to get out there into the housing market, either through rental or home ownership over, you know, really the next 10, 15 years. They're going to be a steady driver of demand. And so that's sort of knowable. What's less clear, and I think the aha and not so good a way for us this past year has been the supply side of the market, right? Can we sustain existing home sales? Can we continue to build new homes so that we can add housing to the market so that those trying to enter, you know, have a home to actually
yes.
go out and purchase. So the tricky thing for the forecasting right now, and the thing we spent a lot of time thinking about leading up to the annual convention last week, was really the supply side story. We actually saw existing home sales on a seasonally adjusted basis slow down across the summer, right? June, July, and August.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of decelerated. And everyone's talking about the fact, especially at the convention, that that's due to a lack of supply. We're not replenishing that inventory of homes for
yep.
sale. And until we get some new supply in at the top that makes, you know, especially some of the boomers or maybe some of the Gen Xers want to move up into their next home and free up some of that first-time housing supply, it's sort of binding things up. You know, the other thing that
yep.
I talked about last week was the fact that we're not used to so many homes having transitioned out of homeownership and over to
yes.
single-family rental.
That was
really a lot of that first-time home buyer
yes.
stock that we would expect to be there, right? And it's not
that was,
and those are,
yeah, for me,
do you like
yeah,
that part?
For me, that was the part that was aha for me, is that
yeah.
I mean, we've seen how many homes are in the rental pool and how many homes are and the, how it's, you know, how the investors came in. We've got BlackRock, all the various ones that are holding thousands of homes as rentals. And we're looking at the impact that it has. So that was really interesting that you guys had focused on that. I want, before we get into housing, it's just really opening up the whole housing discussion. I can't wait to get there. But before we do, I want to go, first of all, in this order to Joe and then over to Andy and Alice to get some questions in on the broader economic issues. And so open the door for that. And then we're going to get into housing and interest rate forecast. So on the broader markets, Joe, do you have any questions for Lynn?
Well, it has to do with projections for rates, which she, which the MBA is showing as rising a whole lot faster than inflation. That's got to put additional pressure on affordability. So can you speak to your thoughts about that?
Yeah. I think on the affordability side right now, we don't see rates as being a particularly large headwind for affordability for one of the reasons I mentioned a moment ago, that we don't think rates will keep going up unless the economy keeps building alongside of it, right? Unless wages, if slowly, are still kind of growing alongside the rate increases. I think it's more the story of that is tough for affordability is the supply question, right? Because so many people want to enter the homeownership market right now, that's putting upward pressure on prices. That price, you know, prices have been outgrowing wages over the last 5-6 years, almost double, you know, by twice the rate that incomes are increasing. And so it's that pressure on prices that's being created by a lack of enough supply in the market that I think is the real headwind for affordability.
Andy, any questions on the
yes,
more on the broader economic picture, and then we want to get to housing. We'll do another round. You get to come back around and ask the housing questions and the specific market questions, but on the broader economic questions.
As I get to speak with Dr. Fisher, you didn't tell
yes.
me that rule when you started, Dave. I've got a housing question.
Okay, well, we'll get to the housing questions. Okay, we'll get to the housing questions. So no questions on the economy, where are things going? You're an economic major, so I know you have a lot of thoughts on that. Is there any aspect of the forecast that you're questioning?
Yeah, well, let me look at the economic side of this, because I was looking more at the housing sector details. Well, you know, the thing that's always interesting is GDP growth. Everybody talks about GDP growth. So when we're pretty like down a little bit, and so that seems inconsistent with what they say on the news about anticipated GDP growth. So could you explain why you think it's going down when people on the news say it's going up? Not that they know anything.
Yeah, I would say, you know, our forecast is really pretty flat insofar as 2%, you know, 1.9 to 2.1, you know, somewhere around 2% is what we see for the near term. You know, historically, we've gone through these periods of slower growth. And it's a little counterintuitive because I think all of us feel like we're living in this world of, you know, big data and the technology boom. And certainly, you know, you go to our conventions and all of us are talking about new technology. Isn't that improving our efficiency? But it is interesting to look historically and realize how big a time lag there is between innovation and new technology and when we actually see the efficiency kind of gain, that productivity gain in GDP. And so it feels like we're in this sort of slow period right now, and that there are gains that will, you know, be working their way into all of our everyday lives, that those efficiencies aren't fully realized right now, and it's going to take some more time. So,
yeah.
You know, the other thing, you know, we don't have this forecast really isn't assuming anything about tax plans or infrastructure investment or any of the other things that government might be adding to the pot yet, because we don't really know enough detail to kind of work that in. So I would think those are the two things that might differentiate the way we're looking at the world compared to some others.
Well, that's a great point. And, well, Dave, can I ask a quick follow-up?
Yes.
I don't want to burn too much time.
Yes.
But so you mentioned about the impact on technological innovation and the pace by which that drives the economy. And, you know, you think about TV sets were, you know, invented in like the 20s or 30s and became popular in the 40s and 50s, but really prolific not until like 60s and 70s, and now everybody has five TVs. That's a long time, not like 60 years.
Yeah.
Do you see the pace of technology innovation impacting the economy actually accelerating relative to historical patterns?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to take 60 years for a lot of our current, you know, think about all the new analysis that we're doing, the churning of big data, et cetera. I don't think it's going to take nearly as long for that to work in, but it still takes time to really permeate and change the efficiencies. And certainly, you know, I think the mortgage industry is a great example, right? We've just had huge regulatory changes. We've had all sorts of things that have increased the number of full-time employees that we have to produce a loan, to QC it, to service it. You know, and we still haven't been able to catch up now with technology to help improve that efficiency and, you know, bring those FTEs back under control. And it's going to take a little bit of time yet. So we're still, you know, we've just now digested all of that. But now we've got to turn technology on that to hopefully get some efficiency gains over the next couple of years. So I view that as a medium-term project, not a 60-year project.
Great point.
Alice, let you jump in with a question. I can't wait to get into the housing starts, or the housing information starting with housing starts. But Alice?
Okay, great. I think I'll go back to worldwide economics, right? So do you see
anything
out there? I know it's difficult to, you can't predict what's going to happen in, for example, European markets. But, you know, what are some of the things you might be looking at that could put some upward pressure on rates?
Upward pressure on rates. Well, I think actually we have to look a little bit at home when you think about upward pressure on rates. You're right that economies in other parts of the world are improving a little bit. Their economic health has definitely improved over the course of this year so far. And so that, you know, provides some other outlets for investors, maybe takes a little pressure off of rates in some ways. But our own economy, our own fiscal policy, you know, our tax plans that we might put in place, I think are the potential things that could influence interest rates. And we can't forget the debt. You know, our national debt is something that if it continues to increase at the rate that the CBO is projecting, it starts to crowd out other investments. It could cause, you know, interest rates to have to increase in order to lure in the amount of money that we're going to need to fund the national debt. So I think that's sort of one of the things that's hard to keep in front of us, but man, it's important.
When you look at where things are at globally, I think there's nothing but potential for on the negative side there, negative news. Look what's happening in Spain. You look at now that North Korea said today that they're preparing for war. I mean, any one of those are going to have a downward pressure on mortgage rates. It's what I would anticipate based on current reactions. And we're getting a ton of questions in here, and a lot of them are going into the mortgage market. There's some people that feel that the housing starts are a big issue, and you're projecting, understandably so, that we're going to see housing starts moving up. One question that came in from one of our listeners was this: why is it that the builders have not gotten on top of this and created more inventory when we have this? Is there a fear out there that we're going to see the largest institutional investors that are holding on to so much housing begin to dump that out? And is that the factor? What is keeping builders from not doing more in the area housing starts?
I think that's a really good question, and it's certainly something we've thought a little bit. You know, there's this shadow supply of housing that's going to come back to owner-occupied side. One, I think you need to keep in mind that the institutional ownership of that, it's only like 1-2% of the single-family housing stock is actually in institutional hands. A lot of that is held by mom and pops, and just, you know, someone who had to take a new job during the recovery and decided to rent out their unit while they went to buy something else, and wait out the cycle. So it's a little hard to know. It's a good question that the investor mindset isn't exactly the same as the owner-occupiers. It's hard for us to predict when some of that might come back. But you know what? Rents are still kind of high, right? Those who bought in and have good a low basis in some of that housing stock, they're getting a pretty good return. So I don't know that that's really holding back home builders. I think there's a lot of things. And depending on what part of the country you're in, you might pick one or two or four of these other factors. But one of the things we're really worried about right now is really labor, right? This is the one area, construction labor is the one place you're seeing, you know, wages rise rather quickly, 5% and 6% on a year-over-year basis, because we can't find enough, you know, well-skilled, you know, carpenters and others to be part of these teams. We need to build housing. And the hurricanes pose quite a question for all of that, because we're going to be drawing resources, especially labor, down into Texas and to Florida. And to Puerto Rico to help repair and remodel and rebuild in these places. So that really does create a headwind for the, especially the southern tier of the U.S., I think, where a lot of building has been going on.
But your forecast is optimistic for 2018, looking at the first quarter. There are some positive numbers in here, actually stronger numbers than 2017. So that's good news. Yes. And it stays, and your forecast goes as strong into 2019. So I'm very pleased with those numbers.
Well, I mean, you look at the supply issues we were talking about earlier. There's not that many, not enough inventory in existing homes, so you've got to go look for new homes to start helping to fill that demand. But there are a lot of headwinds for home builders on that. We're actually going to do a webinar tomorrow on that on Wednesday, with the home builders. So Rob Dietz, Chief Economist at NAHB, Mike Frattantoni, Chief Economist at MBA, and myself, we'll be talking about that in quite some detail, what those headwinds are and what that means for the forecast.
How can people get on that webinar? Is it a free webinar?
Check on MBA. If you're a member, it's free. I think there's a small cost if you're not. If you go into MBA.org, go to the education area, and you'll be able to find November 1st our webinar on supply, housing supply.
Good. Housing supply. That's going to be a great one. I'm going to make sure I attend that. What time is it?
That's a good question. It is, I believe, 1 o'clock as a start time, but I will double check that in just a second.
Double check that,
How about 2 o'clock? 2 o'clock start time.
2 o'clock. All right. Very good.
2 to 3:30 on Wednesday the 1st.
All right. Good. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be an important one. When you're looking at the housing inventory issues and the impact that it has on existing home sales, I'm looking at your forecast. If you could talk a bit about that, because again, we're seeing across the board some increase in numbers. So that bodes well for the mortgage industry.
No, that's right. So for existing home sales, we're forecasting about a 2.5% to 3.5% increase in sales over the next couple of years. So modest, but growing, right? It feels like the markets just keep building. They're not accelerating particularly fast, but they are building in strength somewhat. New home sales were a little bit stronger numbers there. Of course, that's a smaller part of the market, but we're hoping to see about 6% to 7% growth over the next couple of years on the new home sales side. So that's going to help supplement and hopefully free up, get some liquidity going in the market by allowing that move-up borrower to buy up and that first-time home buyer to get in to the market.
I'm looking at interest rates forecast, and then we're going to go around in the mortgage originations. Let's cover those real quickly. Man, it just time flies so fast every time we have you on here, Lynn. It's so good. And mortgage rates, again, we have those inching up. Again, what you said earlier was, and several people were commenting about that. I don't think the issue is we could see rates move. The consensus is we could see rates move up as much as 0.5 point and it not have an impact on their volume. They're seeing that kind of demand out there. There's some more questions on that are coming up that we want to get to on technology. That's interesting that we got some of those. So mortgage interest rates, no real surprise there, not any massive jumps here, and you're predicting that it's not going to have a negative impact on the volumes.
No, we're really not. You know, our forecast is that by the end of next year, we'll still be under a 5% rate in terms of a 30-year fixed.
Right.
Interest rate, you know, getting up to you know a little over 5 in 2019. So next year we're still thinking that there's going to be about 3 short-term rate increases, but the yield curve is flattening a little bit, so it's not a 1-for-1 increase in the 30-year. You know, the other thing we'll have to keep an eye on and is a risk to the forecast is what happens as the Fed allows a little bit more to run off of their balance sheet in terms of mortgage-backed securities. So,
yep.
So far, so good. They have a really kind of sedate plan to just slowly watch this roll out. Someone was talking about, you know, should happen like watching paint dry. But as that starts to increase a little bit, you know, markets are going to figure out who's going to step in to be that investor on the mortgage-backed security side. And, that's a potential risk to the forecast.
And I'm looking at your refinance volume, predictably, that is going to continue to just dwindle down and become less significant.
Well, no matter how benign we think the interest rate increases for purchase, it's not so benign for the refi side of the market.
Yep.
Of course, we've seen about a 40% drop in refinances this year. That will continue to slow down next year before kind of flattening out in 2019 and 2020. And, you know, our purchase forecast is still pretty modest for next year, about 7% growth. That's a combination of those existing home sales, the new stuff, and a little bit of increase in house prices still. That'll push the purchase side up, but it's not enough to offset the refi volume. So folks are still, you know, really looking for how they're going to be that more efficient player and get that purchase volume that's going to keep the wheels turning, as they say.
Well, let's get over to this time. We're going to go Alice, and then Andy had to drop. He said, "I got my question in, so I'm able to get his question asked."
He's done with me. He got his question.
He's not done with you. He'd love to stay on. He's got another call he's got to run to. We're running a bit over. So let's start with Alice, and then Joe, and then we're going to wrap it up with Alan's got a question on technology. It represents a number of questions coming in. So, Alice.
Just one, I guess, as I'm thinking through all this, we haven't touched on servicing values at all or trying to get that plan at all. When things are flat, you kind of go, well, who's on the win side and are there any buyers out there? So just can you touch a little bit on what the servicing market, the MSR market's like?
Well, probably. I'm not sure your best person to talk about that. Dave was talking about my colleague Marina Walsh the other day, and I always turn to Marina on these questions. But certainly, you know, values and I think the liquidity of the MSR market have improved this year, right? We got that. We didn't really think interest rates were going to jump up as quick as they did after the election, and so that certainly stabilized things a little bit in terms of MSR values. We know that, you know, kind of looking at the income from that side for firms has been fairly stable this year, so not at all the drag I think it was last year. So that's really, you know, the outlook for right now is steady as she goes.
Yeah, thanks, Lynn. You had mentioned that you had not built into your forecast things like, you know, tax policy and things like that. But how concerned should the industry be regarding the possibility of losing the interest deduction and the deduction of real estate taxes?
Right. It seems like everyone's coming around to realize just how big the constituencies are that are going to speak up about that. You know, it's never a concern that there's going to be a lot of folks from the real estate side who are going to step up to try to protect these things. You know, MBA's view on this is let's see the whole package. Let's see all the different ways in which potential home buyers could be helped by tax reform. And let's understand that full picture before we get really upset about any particular thing. You know, even if they don't touch the mortgage interest deduction, one of the things on the table is a much larger standard deduction. So that reduces the number of people who will itemize. So, you know, there's definitely stuff to worry about here, but let's see what the whole package looks like. And hopefully this coming Wednesday, or hopefully by the end of the week at least, we're going to see more. But, you know, I think what we've seen, at least what I've been reading the last even just the last couple of days, you know, the loss of deductions for, what do they call it, SALT, right, the state and local taxes,
yep.
It seems like people are backing off of that as well. So we're really going to have to wait and see how the conversation evolves this week. But you can be bet we've been in this conversation since before the beginning of this year. We've been talking to everybody all the way through. So we're not going to back down at this point. That was I had to get that in somehow. I've had Tom Petty in the back
Tom
of my
Petty.
Mind ever since, you know, our new chairman Tom Dave Motley. That's his song. I'm not going to back down. So we'll
not
going to
back
down. Theme there.
Motley's got some great songs. Something about that. Our generation loves, you know, music metaphors. So anyway. Alan, let's wrap this up with a question from you. I know you have one on technology, and it represents a lot of what's coming in from our listener base. So,
hey, thanks for having me, David. So I just wanted to ask, one, thanks for joining us. But I wanted to just ask, you know, technology plays such an important role, either one, in the predictive modeling of where our economy may go, but also in an effect of the actual economy, right? And major technology companies and investments in technology. So I just wanted to throw that over to your side and say, you know, how does technology affect the overall picture and the forecast coming up?
Right. Well, that's one of those really amorphous things that as a forecaster, you both love and hate because it's your potential
yes.
engine of growth. And on
yeah.
the other side, how do you predict when it's going to actually show up in the numbers? When is it going to move, you know, the lever really forward? You know, what we see right now is continued investment in technology, especially when you look at the mortgage industry, when you think about, you know, the increase in investment just even in the last couple, 3 or 4 years, but it's not at all clear when that really hits the bottom line. So our forecast right now, and it's a medium-term forecast, right, over 18, 19, 20, is that there isn't a gigantic increase in productivity from technology that we see. We know there are some problems with measuring that, but even those who spend a lot of time thinking about how do I measure, you know, all of these things that technology could possibly be doing to the economy, doesn't seem like we're missing, you know, everything. So wish-washy
sure.
answer. We're keeping an eye on it. And, you know, a lot of potential in healthcare. You know, everybody's waiting for robotics to be the next thing. And I don't worry about that as being a job killer, as some people talk about.
No.
I think it's the thing that lets us do more interesting things, become more efficient, get to the next place. But those ready-to-go technologies just aren't quite there yet, right? They're just not ready
to
add.
I like your answer. And I do think that, you know, one of the things that's fascinated me the most is just being able to, you know, look at your analysis of where you want to be versus on different economic models. So I think technology is really helping us out there, too.
Yep. Good point.
Hey, we have run out of time. In fact, we've gone over, but it's been well worth it. Lynn, I want to say thank you so much for being here with us. Again, folks, we've had Dr. Lynn Fisher of the MBA, Vice President of Research and Economics, also Executive Director of MBA's Research Institute for Housing America. Very important initiatives. We're thrilled to have you here. And we want to just say thank you to you and Mike and the whole team at the MBA who's working so hard to try to figure out where the markets are and keep us on track. You guys, the whole association does a great job of trying to keep us on the right track. We just value the association and value what you and Mike are doing there in the economic research area. So appreciate you joining us, Lynn.
Thanks for having me. Great talking to all of you.
You bet. So good. Next week, folks, November 6th, we'll have Don Lamp coming on. We're going to talk about what Don and I are talking about in San Francisco this week on Thursday, especially when it comes to what is the initiatives, what is the impact of social media on originations. We're seeing very interesting evidence that it is growing much more rapidly than a lot of people ever predicted. And I pay close attention to what Ellie Mae is turning out. I saw some studies that Doug Duncan and the team over at Fannie Mae have turned out. We're seeing some contrary trends. So we're going to be talking about that. Don Lamp, we're going to kick it off talking about the regulatory component of this so we can kind of get a legal backdrop. Got to start there with everything when it comes to mortgages. What's the legal backdrop? And so Don will be here. And then we're going to be kicks off a 4-week series on origination through technology and social media. So be sure to tune in for all of our upcoming podcasts throughout the month of November. Appreciate you tuning in and being with us and telling others about the podcast. Have a great week, everybody, and look forward to talking to you and having you back here next week. Have a great week, everybody.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.